Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to continue our series to honor Native American Indian Heritage Month, visit with Toys for Military Kids, and get an update from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard would like to salute two of our biggest supporters, the Minnesota Vikings and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Both teams have shown their overwhelming support of their communities through programs, events, and fundraisers. They also show their support every year to our service members by hosting a Military Appreciation Day. On these nights, both teams make the time to recognize Minnesota service members and their families. I would like to personally thank both teams for their support and your service to this great state of Minnesota.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As we've done all month, we're honoring Native American Indian Heritage Month. And historically, American Indians have the highest record of military service per capita when compared to other ethnic groups. The reasons are deeply rooted in traditional cultural values that drive them to serve their country. These include a proud warrior tradition, best exemplified by the following qualities said to be inherent to most, if not all, Native American societies: strength, honor, pride, devotion, and wisdom. These qualities closely correlate with military tradition. And joining me today on the first half of the show, we have a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard, Warrant Officer Austin Corbine. Austin, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Bonjour. Welcome. Thank you.
And that was Ojibwe?
That was.
All right. Austin, can you share with our listeners where were you born and what band of the Chippewa were you a part of?
I'm originally from Bad River Indian Reservation up in northern Wisconsin. I grew up there pretty much all my life until I went to military when I was 18 years old. I was born in Madison, Wisconsin. My mom and dad was going to school in Madison. And then so we moved back up there when I was about 5 years old, kind of live up on the reservation until I went.
And Corbin, Austin, we've been talking on this show about American Indians and the high numbers that sign up to serve in military service. And what your tribal veteran service officers have told me, that in a lot of the tribes, up to 25% sign up, as compared to about 1% of the rest of the general population. Do you find that's common? Was that common in your band? And what's the root of that?
And it's you know, growing up, it's pretty common. You know, back home it was, you know, start at a very young age, you go to the powwows, you kind of, you know, taught to respect the elders, to respect your family, respect the veterans, you know, honor the veterans. So when you go to powwows, you had veteran songs, you would go there and pay the respects. But then you kind of find out how many family members that you grew up that served and served proudly. You know, from my grandpa to my uncles, to my great uncles, to cousins, and even to myself. You know, you kind of would think of you know, what their sacrifice was and a time they spent away from home. So that's kind of what I would think of, and that's what kind of inspired me to go into military.
So it's part of the culture and part of the way that you grew up. We went to a veterans powwow up in Cloquet last summer, and the first thing they did there was to bring out all of the veterans, and it looked to me like they treated their veterans in very high regard.
Yeah, and we do. You know, it's, you talk about that warrior mentality from the cultural and the history aspect of it. You know, it just, the time that we spend away from home, the honor and pride that we take into our veterans, and the kind of how we inspire to be like them, you know, that the sacrifices that they gave to try to make us to have a better life. That's one thing that drives me to this day to still stay in the military. And, you know, to make my family proud, the honor that we do. So.
Now, Austin, I understand you've served about 23 years now, but when you first enlisted, was part of this to consider the military as an opportunity to get more education and more experience?
It was. You know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, going through high school, it was, you know, a different environment than, you know, talk about you know, the protests with the spear fishing and all that stuff like that, kind of the, not say necessarily hatred, but just the kind of dislike at the time. I wanted to go to college. Parents couldn't, you know, they tried to do their best and do whatever they could to try to get me to college, but I wanted something more. Kind of, that's, remember my grandpa and his family and friends that served. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to do that and just the experiences of it. So that's why I joined.
So it's been quite a journey, because I think when you started, you decided to enlist in the active duty United States Air Force.
Yeah. Yeah. I went from the Air Force to the Army, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Air Force was, I got to work on F-15s and fighter jets. And that was, I was smiling pretty much every day. As work, I got to do electronics, avionics, stationed in Florida, England, went to Italy for a little while. But to have that, watch those aircraft take off, to be able to troubleshoot, to be able to fix it, and the camaraderie you had within that, just, you couldn't beat it. And, you know, I talked about this before, but every day was just, until this day now, 23 years in, every day is a moment when I reflect and think of where I came from and what I got to do and where I've been and who I got to meet.
We're speaking with Austin Corbine on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Austin, when you were in the Air Force, you said you were stationed in London, and when you came home from there, you came home with a bride.
Yeah, I was at RAF Lakenheath, which was a little bit northeast of Cambridge. And you know what? My grandma joked with me one time, calling, you know, my war bride. But that was kind of something from, you know, World War II days and things like that. Yeah, but I met her, and the story of how we met and who picked up who is kind of the mystery, I guess. We kind of tease each other, but yeah, and don't regret one day of it at all. She, you know, she's been very supportive and changed my life, and continue to, you know, next week I think we celebrate our 17th year anniversary. So, you know, looking for many more.
Now, you met her over in London, and then when you got out of the Air Force after 8 years, you went back up to northern Wisconsin and brought her to the reservation.
I did, yeah. It was, yeah, when we first brought her back, it was, and she just couldn't believe it. It's just the way that the culture, the way that the family just, you know, treated her, you know, with open arms and you know, it was just a great experience for her and for me, you know, and family's always taught us to kind of be, you know, to love one another, but also be open with, you know, kind of with everybody too. So that was pretty nice to come home to.
And then you discovered when you get out that you kind of missed the military, and you joined the Wisconsin National Guard for a while, and then you arrived at the Minnesota Army National Guard.
Yeah, you know, you talk about people, and sometimes, you know, you miss the military, we miss it, and I think I lasted all about 9 months, and then I joined the Army in Wisconsin, like you said, and then you stay following, yeah, and then came to Minnesota, and you know, Minnesota National Guard's been great to me, and I try to do my best for them. So,
and your position now with the Minnesota Army National Guard
is I'm a 151 Alpha, which is a aviation maintenance warrant officer.
And you're full time there?
And I am full time there. I'm full time in the quality control section down at the facility, our Blackhawk unit, or facility down in St. Paul.
And you had another change a couple of years ago, because they pulled their warrant officers from the NCO ranks, and something happened. There was an opening, and you became a warrant officer.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was very, very thankful for that. Kind of with my experience as far as, you know, working on F-15s for avionics. Coming 2005, coming to St. Paul, working on Blackhawks for avionics, and then Blackhawk mechanic, and then went to the Chinook and St. Cloud and became a mechanic, and then flight engineering, and ended up being a flight engineer instructor for enlisted guys in the back.
Quite a journey and quite an experience. Yeah. Austin, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your time in the Minnesota Army National Guard. We're talking with Warrant Officer Austin Corbine on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been celebrating the fact that November is Native American Heritage Month, and we've been celebrating the fact that throughout history, Native Americans have served in this nation's military with great courage and distinction. Native Americans have fought in every war since the nation's founding and have taken their rightful place as heroes in the nation's history. And fully 24, that's 24 Native Americans have earned the Medal of Honor for their courage and devotion to the nation. And in the first and second segments today, we've been talking to Warrant Officer Austin Corbine, who's a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard via the United States Air Force and the Wisconsin National Guard and now the Minnesota Army National Guard. And a couple of years ago, he joined the ranks of warrant officers. And that's a very important position in the Minnesota National Guard because they warrant officers provide the consistency within the various organizations. So you're in a great spot now, part of the Aviation Maintenance Unit. And Austin, I think you wanted to tell me when you first enlisted and went to basic training, was there some funny stories about that?
So one story I kind of like to, you know, kind of talk people about throughout my time in the military was, I enlisted in 92, December 92, and kind of with the environment, you know, growing up. And I had a lot of great friends that were non-Indian and stuff too, but in basic training, then people would say, hey, you're Native American, you're Indian. I was like, yeah. And they would say, hey, do you have long hair? Did you live in teepees? You know, did you wear moccasins? And did you have color TV and things like that? And I didn't know how to take it. I kind of didn't laugh. You know, I said, you know, no, just politely kind of said, no, this is where I lived. I lived in a house, had TV and running water and you know, things like that too. So, but yeah, so then, I called my dad, you know, first time I got to use a phone, I called my dad and kind of told him that. And that's what he said. He said, hey, did you laugh? And he's been around, you know, kind of around the country and stuff like that. And I was like, no, I didn't laugh. And he said, no, he says, it's our job. He said, you don't laugh. He said, you just, you know, you kind of educate, you know. And so since then, that's what I've been kind of trying to do is kind of think of that and not, you know, especially in environments nowadays too. You know, we talk about treaty rights and we talk about casinos and gaming and stuff like that too. But it's just always that. Well, then a couple of years ago after that happened in basic training, I met this native from Menominee. And we were talking one night and he said the same stories he had. And finally he goes, yeah, my grandma told me a good one. And I was like, what? He said, you know, next time anybody comes up to you and asks you if you live in a teepee or, you know, TV and something like that, if you had running water. And he said, just same, say, yeah, we had running water. She lives two teepees down. So,
so you got me on that one.
Yeah. So that's kind of the stories. But it's just a change so much and things like that too. So that's what's, it's kind of good about educating people.
Now, throughout your career, you've told me that you've traveled. You were in London, and you came back home, and then now you live down here in the Twin Cities. And when you go back home to the Bad River Band, do the young people come up and ask you, where have you been, and how come you got another stripe, and how do you like the military? Do you get a lot of those questions?
I do. I get a lot of that from the young kids and from veterans, too, you know, that we try to, you know, help each other out. And especially when I went warrant officer, that was, you know, pride I had with, you know, veterans back home was amazing to me. You know, these are the guys that I looked up to, you know, that kind of inspired me to join the military and to try to be, you know, serve our people proud. And so especially with young kids, we kind of, you know, tell them, say, hey, this is what I got. This is what happened to me. You know, this is the experience I had. The people that I met is just opened my eyes a lot too. Different cultures, different backgrounds, and different job experiences. It's just, that's what I try to inspire to kids and say, this is what the military is about to me. So I recommend, you know, if they ask me, should I join? Like, yeah, you know, this is a great opportunity, but of course there's going to be inherent risks, you know, according with, you know, military as far as what your job's going to be and things like that too. So and to say, hey, it's a great opportunity, but at the same time, kind of be truthful with them.
Now, Austin, my observation over the last 6 years of doing this show is that the military's changed a lot in the 44 years since I've been out. And, of course, they had the draft when I was in the military, and there were people there that didn't want to be there. But today it's an all-volunteer force. Mm-hmm. And my observation is that you're an enlisted person, you're a warrant officer, you're an officer, but there isn't much recognition of race, religion, creed, any of that stuff, your fellow soldiers. Is that what you see? Is that what you're experiencing these days?
Yeah. Yes. That's what we've been. That's what I've been seeing through in my 23 years plus in the military. Of course, you know, not every organization you can try to eliminate, but it's you don't care, and you know, you kind of. You look at the person to the left and to your right, and hey, can you do your job or not? You know, how can I help you? How can I, you know, mentor you, or how can you train me? And you look at the, you know, the person, and you never think about the sex, the religion, the background they came from, the color of their skin. That's just
so kind of a very positive situation.
Very positive, these days. Yeah. And that's all I kind of think of, and that's what I've seen throughout the military.
We're speaking to a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard, Warrant Officer Austin Corbine, on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Austin, I understand that you serve on the American Indian Diversity Council and Service of the Minnesota Army National Guard. Can you tell us what that is? What's that about?
Well, within the, you know, the Adjutant General's, part of his policies was, you know, talking about diversity and inclusion within diversity as far as, you know, within the communities. Within the military community itself, you know, between Native American, African American, Hispanic, Latino, LGBT, and then inclusion. So what we try to do is we look at it within two parts to it. And we look at it too within the workforce itself, and we try to educate and get educated from the diverse background of the military nowadays. The misconception out there, and try to get that word out. Say, hey, this is what our culture is. You know, tell me about your culture and your background. Another part of this too is where we look at within the communities and say, hey, you know, what are the concerns that are out there within the communities and each individual affinity group, and try to you know, say, hey, this is what we're here for. You know, this is how can we help and find out the needs of within the community.
So part of what the Adjutant General has been working on since he's been in office over the last 6 years is diversity in the force. And what he's explained to me is that he wants the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard to reflect the makeup of all the communities in Minnesota in terms of diversity.
Correct.
And that could be Native American Indians, it could be blacks, it could be, you know, everybody that makes up all of Minnesota. He wants to have his recruiters and have everybody working to make sure that we reflect the community.
Correct. Yep. And it's a great initiative. I've been on it for a year now, and it's just we've been trying to do as much as we can right now, and try to get more and more people involved with that, and within the communities and within the military itself. So it's a great program. Proud to be part of it, and we'll hope to continue to do more with it.
So you've been in the service now for over 23 years. The new men and women that are joining the Minnesota Army National Guard, what are you seeing? What kind of quality? What kind of people are they today?
We talk about this a lot, as far as, you know, your generation to my generation to the generation underneath us. You know, kind of the difference on how to we. You know, accommodate or kind of train these individuals. Kids nowadays are, you know, we don't say the Y generation. We kind of, they want to know more, you know, kind of want to know more as far as, hey, when we try to train and try to teach and try to do their job, it's kind of more of explaining to them, this is why we got to do this. This is our purpose, or this is why I want you to fix this, or kind of, and a little bit more. Want that more knowledge, you know, kind of say nowadays is, you know, when I came through, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it. You know, kind of a mentality. It's like, you told me to do it, I'll do it.
But they're curious now.
They're curious, yeah. They're more curious nowadays. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know.
They learn quickly.
They learn quickly. And, you know, you just got to, you know, keep them engaged and
challenged.
Challenged, yeah. It's just, it's, and they're great kids.
And you're in a position to do that now.
Trying to, and as times adjust, you know, I have to change, and you know, some of the old timers are still with me, and you know, they have to adjust too. So it's always a constant change and adjustments. But that's one good thing about it, is that we try to reflect what we have and try to adjust to better ourselves.
So, Austin, if young people would ask you today about a career in military service, a career in the Army National Guard or the United States Air Force, yeah. What would you tell them?
I'd tell them yes. But I also want to not just say, you know, yes, join, but trying to find out and what do they want to do. You know, talking about school benefits, we talk about, hey, do you want to, you know, go on the ground? Do you want to do air? Do you want to do tanks? Whatever else you want to do, and try to say, hey, just and guide them to that direction. Hey, do you, you know, want to go to college and do this, or, you know, in the medic, or whatever else they want to do. And so that's what I try to find out. And I know a lot of other people do, and try to best to steer them into the military in the right path they want to go to.
So, well, Austin, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio today. And I hope the rest of your career is as exciting as the first 23 years have been.
And that
a lot more of your Native Americans from the Lake Superior bands join the military, because they're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Austin Corbine, a warrant officer from the Minnesota Army National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we're going to visit with Toys for Military Kids, so please stay with us.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to visit with the group called Toys for Military Kids. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
November is Native American Indian Heritage Month. And as we celebrate, I want to take a moment to talk about our Native American veterans here in Minnesota. A permanent plaque on the Capitol grounds in St. Paul serves as a reminder of the contributions Native American veterans have made to our state. Their contributions to our nation's military were noted by General George Washington and have continued on to today's conflicts. It has been documented that Native Americans, percentage-wise, are the largest ethnic group to have served in our nation's armed forces. The Department of Defense's research found that this high percentage has been, in part, due to their cultural attributes of strength, honor, devotion, pride, and wisdom. We are grateful for our Native American veterans for their service and sacrifice to this great nation.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to help us talk about Toys for, the number four, Military Kids, is Annette Kuiper, who is Director of Military Outreach for the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. Annette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
Now, it's coming up on the holidays, and there's a group out there that's working on raising money and finding toys and doing all kinds of things pretty much all year round.
All year round. Toys for Military Kids is really one of the initiatives from our Egan Yellow Ribbon Network, and it really shows what our Yellow Ribbon Networks can do across the state.
And you brought with us today the guy that works on this almost every day of the year.
Every day of the year, one of our hardest working volunteers, Mike Clark with the Egan Yellow Ribbon Network, and he's in charge of Toys for Military Kids. And I brought him today here to talk about this wonderful program we have here.
Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
We've had you or your predecessor, Les, on the show, I think, every year we've been on the show, six full years now.
Yep. I've been on the last. This will be my third year.
Third year. So, and I understand you took that program over from Les, and you're cranking it up a little bit. It's growing, isn't it?
We've had some significant developments this year. We've been able to add Thrivent Financial as a partner for people to make a donation if they're a Thrivent member, and we're really excited about that.
So as a corporation, they're helping raise money so that you've got the funds to take care of your program.
That's correct.
Can you, for our listeners that might not have heard about it, Toys, the number four, Military Kids, tell us what your mission is.
Our mission is to help with the continuity of the families during the holiday season, which is always an anxious time of the year. And this is our 15th year, and basically we're collecting toys, raising money to buy toys for the military units to have a distribution of toys in conjunction with their drill weekends that are coming up rapidly.
Now, I think Les told us maybe the first year he was on that a little bit about how this was started and organized, and he joined forces with the AUSA, the United States Army VESE chapter, because they had 501c3 status, and they've been a good partner all those years. But there was a need out there from some military families that maybe only the only job they had was their weekend military job, and in tough times when they didn't have a civilian job. Christmas and some of the holidays got to be a tough time, didn't it?
That's correct.
And so you've been helping with that all over Minnesota for, as you said, now 15th year?
This will be the 15th year. It'll be my third year in this position, but we've expanded outstate. We also serve Wisconsin and Iowa now.
Okay, now don't be telling me you're a Packers fan now.
Actually, I'm an owner, but you're only reaching 200,000 people, I found out during lunchtime, so your secret's safe with me.
Well, this is a military network in Vikings land, so let's be careful. Now, tell us what kind of things happen between now and the end of the year.
Well, our house has been converted into Santa's workshop as we speak, and we're in the process of moving boxes out to a number of different facilities and companies and colleges throughout the Twin Cities. And we're also bringing in toys that we collected last year after the event, sorting them by age and gender, and making them available to respond to the applications that come in from units throughout the tri-state region.
Now, Mike, if I recall, last year you attended quite a few unit holiday parties.
Yes.
And brought some toys with you. Is that going to happen again this year?
Well, they'll already have the toys, but we're going to attend some of the events. Probably the biggest one will be at Holman Field 3 weeks, 3 weeks from tomorrow, which will be the 2nd of December. And it'll be 150 children with their parents in attendance. And they'll all get toys from Santa in front of a Black Hawk helicopter.
Oh, Annette, are you dressing up as Mrs. Santa this year?
No, I'm not. I'm just supporting them from afar. But we're getting the word out through all of our networks in the metro area to help collect the toys and get everything ready for Mike to distribute.
So, Mike, what kind of numbers are we talking about here?
Well, last year, Tom, we distributed over 2,000 toys to 40 units from Duluth to Des Moines, Wilmer to Wausau, and pretty much every place in between. We've expanded a little farther into Iowa. We're trying to head a little bit farther west into the Fargo-Moorhead area, but we go far as Eau Claire and Wausau in Wisconsin.
Now, Mike, I have to ask you. I understand you don't drive. How do you get to all of these things?
Metro Transit has been really helpful, but now that I've entered the space age with an iPhone, Annette has been kind enough to tell me about the thrills of an Uber account.
So have you tried that yet?
Not yet. I'm in the process of filling out the application.
All right. Well, you report back to me how that works, because I haven't tried it yet either, Mike. So good luck with that.
Thank you.
Now, I understand you also supported a number of families last year.
That's correct. We're finding a lot more family need in the past couple years, and we're eager to respond to that. And we have some people through AUSA that make us aware of family needs and generate an email to us of specific needs for the children and the adults. So it's a wonderful process.
Now, Mike, there's going to be people listening to this interview all over Minnesota on 36 stations today. And if there's a military family out there that needs some help for some toys, how do they go about requesting it?
Well, there's any number of different ways, but probably the best one would be my email address, which is msclark454@comcast.net.
And if they go online and they look for toys, the number 4 military kids, can they find you that way as well?
They can also find that there. They can also go to vesechapter.org, which is our, as you mentioned, our 501c3, where we're embedded, and they can get my information through that as well. And it'll also list the drop sites where toys are in the metro area.
So that's the VESE chapter of the AUSA.
That's correct.
And you're partnering with them still, and that's a great organization. So lots of different ways. If you are a military family, need a little bit of help with Christmas, or if you know a military family needing some help, a lot of those families don't want to admit that. But if they just go to Toys, the number 4 military kids, you handle those inquiries very confidentially, don't you?
That's correct.
And happy to help as many as you can.
That's right.
All right. Now, are you looking for volunteers? And what can they do between now and the holidays?
Well, we have a number of different things that can take place. We're privileged this year to have all 5 Harley dealerships participating as drop sites, so picking up toys at all five of those Harleys throughout the Twin Cities, whether they're in Elk River, Lakeville, Blaine, West St. Paul, Lakeville, they can pick up. We're also blessed to have Caribou as a partner. All the coffee that's donated by the customers for the military needs to be picked up and distributed to the units. And there's all sorts of things that they can do. And if they contact me at the msclark454comcast.net, we can keep them busy.
So if our listeners want to help you, what do you need? Do you need toys? Do you need money? What's the easiest?
As I said last year, D, all of the above. Information to donate is on the website as well as my contact information. And all the drop boxes have a collection card that they could pick up if they don't want to drop off a toy, but they want to do something at a later time. It gives an address. And I might mention that this year's toy drive is dedicated in the memory of Todd Selge, a soldier who was killed in 2009. And every year for the past couple of years, we've donated the toy drive in honor of a soldier who gave his life so that we could do something like this for the families that are here.
Great work, Mike. Keep it up. And Annette, just got 30 seconds left. They're yours.
Oh, well, I just like to thank Mike and all of our wonderful volunteers across the state who are just doing everything they can to support our service members, veterans, and military families. It's what's making our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program expand nationally, and it really shows our military-connected residents across the state that people care about them and want to support them.
Thanks, Annette. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
This is Annette Kuiper and Mike Clark talking about toys for military kids. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to get an update from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to get an update from the Minneapolis VA healthcare center. And joining us on the phone now is Ralph Huesner, the public affairs officer from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Ralph, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Ralph, we want to talk a little bit about 2016 and what's coming up in 2017, but there's a few other little items first. I understand you have a new partnership between the YMCA and the VA.
That's correct. On November 1st, the Minneapolis VA, St. Cloud VA, initiated a arrangement with all YMCAs in the state of Minnesota. For the next 2 years, any veteran, irregardless of your veteran status, whether service-connected or not, can join any of the YMCAs in Minnesota without paying the joiner's fee. That's the initiation fee, and it ranges from YMCA to YMCA. The membership fee is waived. There's still the monthly fee, but it's still important that veterans can get access to the Ys throughout the state. In addition, all the YMCA facilities are willing to make their gyms and other areas available to the VA for job fairs, town hall meetings, and other activities. So we're going to work with YMCA to bring services closer to the veterans throughout the state.
Sounds
so
like
kudos to the Y for making their facilities available.
Sounds like a great partnership, and we can get some of our veterans over there on doing a little exercise. That's good for them, too.
Absolutely.
Ralph, I understand you had a visit at the VA Medical Center from some Minnesota Vikings.
For the last 6 years, around Veterans Day, we have been we've had visitors from the Minnesota Vikings. This year, we had four of the players, including their new guard, Alex Boone. Alex is quite an imposing figure, 6'8", 300-plus pounds.
The quiet guy, too, isn't he?
Yes. he has a huge commitment to veterans because his brother is a U.S. Marine. So he and Blair Walsh came, and Danielle Hunter, defensive end, and a few others. They brought along the cheerleaders and Victor. This is huge for veterans who are in the hospital for long periods of time. And these guys just hung around and chatted, and it boosted spirits. And what was most fun is for the dialogue between the veterans and the players. The players do this on their own time. They don't have to come out into the community, but these fellas made time available, passed out hats, and signed autographs.
It sounded like a great day out at the VA.
It was a lot of fun.
Now, Ralph, it looks like I got to have a hard hat on again out in front. What's going on?
I know. That it seems there's always some construction project in front of the hospital. We are now beginning work on the access between the parking ramp and the hospital. We were expecting to wait until spring to start the work, but because of the good fall weather, we launched it early. It's creating an inconvenience until springtime because all of the traffic, all of the patient activity is routed through the main hospital. So for veterans, patients who are out there, when you get to the VA, you're going to come in through the main entrance. Long term, this is going to be great. The access will have a canopy, it will be heated, and there'll be some immediate parking right out front if you're dropping off a veteran patient in the ER.
Well, a little short-term pain for long-term gain. That'll be another great addition out there.
Exactly.
Ralph, I don't know how we got to November, but let's look back on 2016. What are some of the things you're most happy about with the accomplishments for this year so far?
I think the leadership here would say that improving access to veteran patients. As everyone knows, the VA has been in the news a lot for the last two-plus years regarding wait times. We're proud to say that the wait times in Minneapolis are among the best in the country. Wait times in primary care, specialty care, and mental health care. When it comes to mental health care, it's less than a day to wait. This is for an appointment. If you have an emergency in any one of the areas, we have a 24/7 emergency department. We have psychiatrists on staff. And as part of ACCESS, the Veterans Choice Program, where we send veterans into the community for non-VA care, the complaints have really diminished. We've had over 15,000 veterans use the Veterans Choice Program, and it seems to be doing much better. There are still kinks, but after the Rockies start, I think the system seems to be working. Many, many fewer complaints. A couple other highlights from last year. We opened up a surgery center in September. This allows us to do more specialty-type surgeries. In the last year plus, we started doing bariatric surgery for weight loss, Mohs surgery for skin cancers, and a sophisticated surgery called TABR for heart disease. We will be doing many more surgeries, and therefore we had to expand our surgery center. This is the rooms prior to surgery and post-op went from 11 to 18.
We're speaking with Ralph Huesner, the public affairs officer from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. And Ralph, I understand you broke ground on a 100-unit apartment building as well.
This is part of the VA's commitment to eliminate homelessness for veterans. This initiative launched six-plus years ago under the former Secretary Shinseki. We're not there yet, but Minnesota, with community partners, making great progress. Part of this effort, on our campus this fall, we broke ground on a 100-unit apartment building. It'll be open next year. We currently have two apartment buildings on campus, total of 140 units. These will be reasonably priced for veterans, close to the hospital, I think more to come on this. But because of the good weather, they're making huge progress.
Ralph, we've only got about three or so minutes left. What are you looking forward to next year?
In addition to the just-mentioned apartment building and also the access to the hospital, I think the veterans are going to see inside the hospital two new clinics have been totally renovated. The primary care clinic, which is currently on the first floor, we're going to move that to the fourth floor. In the next couple months, that primary care clinic will open. The new hybrid OR is going to open in January. By hybrid, it means any type of major surgery can be done in these operating rooms, from everything from a hernia to complex surgery. Continued growth. We expect that we will continue to see increased number of veterans seeking care. Right now, we are at 104,000 unique veterans at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and our 13 community clinics. And also in 2017, we will continue to reach out to veterans. We are already planning our town hall meetings. Every 3 months, we go into the community. We've been holding these town halls at VFWs and Legion halls. So we are planning to take the so-called the show on the road. We take our leaders into the community, listen to veterans, and as best we can, respond to their concerns and their questions. So the next one is going to be in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, because we have a couple clinics there. But then in 2017, we'll have 4 town hall meetings. The schedule will soon be posted on our website. And on your program in the months to come, we'll get that schedule out. So we expect a busy year, continuing care for veterans, improving services, reducing wait times, and I'm sure there'll be a number of new initiatives as the new president and his team take over in Washington in the next few months.
Well, we're glad to hear that our veterans are getting their appointments faster than ever, and of course, Minneapolis has always been in good shape, but you're even better now. And a couple of years ago, you opened up that ramp, and ever since that happened, getting in and out of the facility and finding a parking spot is a lot better than it has been in years past.
Well, I remember looking out in the parking lot and seeing veterans in wheelchairs plowing through the snow. You don't have to do that anymore. But it showed that they were a hardy group, and Minnesota, we're just fortunate to get the ramp under budget in a timely manner, and now we're in the process of making improvements with the canopy access.
So they'll be able to get into the in and out of the hospital from the ramp without going outside.
Absolutely.
That'll be another great thing. Now, any more big building projects coming up?
No major building projects, no more outpatient clinics in the community. We call those C-box. We're going to hold at the 13. We have 9 in Minnesota, 4 in western Wisconsin. Our effort there is to maintain the existing clinics, improve service, improve access. We're often asked if we're going to be adding any new services in the clinics, such as audiology, ophthalmology. We will not be doing that, but we are making arrangements to do more community care, non-VA care, so veterans don't have to trek all the way to Minneapolis if they need specialty services.
Ralph, thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to future updates from you. And please greet Director Kelly from all of us here at Minnesota Military Radio.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Tom.
As Ralph Huesner, the Public Affairs Officer from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Austin Corbijn, Mike Clark, Annette Kuiper, Ralph Huesner, Commissioner Larry Shalitoe of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the Civil Air Patrol here in Minnesota and continue looking into Native Americans serving in the military. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota MilitaryRadio.com.